This week on a special episode of WebMD's Health Discovered podcast, we're taking a closer look at a common form of lung cancer that accounts for 85% of all cases.
When I first heard the words, "you have lung cancer," I was in shock.
It's a diagnosis that changes everything. So what does it really mean to advocate for yourself when you're living with non-small cell lung cancer? Listen to Health Discovered on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
SpringFest is heating up at Lowe's, and for a limited time, we have the extra big deals you need to impress guests. Get your outdoor space ready and save $50 on a select Kobalt 24-volt blower kit, now $79. Plus, save $80 on a Charbroil Performance 4-burner grill, now $199. It's springtime, and our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 4/13. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Odd Trails is a true paranormal podcast. If you have a story to share, send it to stories@oddtrails.com. Enjoy the show.
Forget facts. Forget logic. Forget everything that seems real. Just trust. Believe.
A Seat Already Taken by Allie. This happened when I was about 16. At the time, I was dating this boy whose mom was obsessed with going to storage unit auctions. She had a system. She would only bid on the units that had a lot of furniture in them because she could clean them up, flip them, and resell them for a decent profit. His parents owned a vacant house that wasn't livable, but it made the perfect place for her to store all her auction finds. Every room was packed. Mismatched couches, recliners, dressers, mirrors that looked like they'd been hanging in someone's hallway for decades. The place smelled faintly of old wood, dust, and whatever strange scents came along with decades of strangers' belongings. That house always gave me a weird feeling. Like the kind of place you instinctively whisper in, even when you're the only one in there. One day, we were outside, next to the house, with a burn pile going. The fire was roaring, throwing that deep orange glow across the yard, while me, my boyfriend, his twin brother, and their mom were standing around it. The stepdad, who was a tall guy, big, broad, heavyset, pulled up in his police truck. He rolled the windows down, rested his elbow on the door, and just started watching the fire from his seat. He didn't move, didn't get out, didn't say much. It had been one of those muggy Texas afternoons where you can smell the rain coming before you can even feel it. When the first drop started falling, us teenagers ran for cover to the detached garage, while his mom jogged over and climbed into the truck with him. I was standing in the garage doorway, listening to the light patter of rain on the tin roof, when something caught my eye. By the fire, I saw a massive figure, broad shoulders, slow, deliberate movements. He was leaning over the flames, poking at the burning pile. The shape was so clear in my peripheral vision that my brain instantly registered it as their stepdad. But that didn't make sense. I turned my head for a better look, and there was no one there. The fire blazed on, rain sizzling against it. Across the yard, the truck was still parked in the exact same spot, the stepdad still in the driver's seat, windows up, never having moved an inch. I stood there frozen for a moment, scanning the yard. The rain wasn't heavy enough to obscure my view. There was nowhere anyone could have slipped away without me seeing them. Eventually, I convinced myself it was a trick of the rain, the shadows, and the smoke. I didn't mention it to anyone. We eventually went inside the house to get out of the weather. Their mom had just returned from another storage unit haul, so we decided to pick through the new treasures. The living room was full of random furniture. Chairs were stacked in corners. Coffee tables leaned up against the wall. Old lamps without bulbs. I spotted a recliner that was actually pretty clean, and I sank into it. I grabbed a box of clothes in hopes of finding some vintage gems. Across from me, the twin was going through a stack of old photos. He stopped suddenly and grinned. "Hey guys, look. This might be the guy who owned the unit." When he held the photo up, I felt the blood drain from my face. It was a photo of an older man. A huge man. Broad chest. Thick arms. A presence that filled the frame. He was sitting in a tan recliner. The exact same recliner I was sitting in at that very moment. The lighting in the photo was dim, and his expression was hard to read. Not angry, not happy, just there, watching. I felt this rush of cold flood through me. I immediately jumped up from the chair like it had burned me, my skin prickling all over. Everyone was staring at me like I'd lost my mind, so I told them what I had seen outside by the fire. They laughed, rolled their eyes, made little comments about me being dramatic. That was kind of their thing, putting other people down to make themselves feel better. It was one of the many reasons I broke up with that boyfriend soon after. But that night, something settled in my gut. I know what I saw. I know that figure by the fire hadn't been my imagination. I didn't feel anything malicious from it. No wave of dread. No sense of danger. But the idea that it could follow its favorite chair from one place to another stuck with me. I never went back to that house again, and I'm very thankful for that. I've always loved hearing ghost stories, but I never really wanted to be in one. And now, every time I see a recliner in a thrift store, I can't help but wonder, who's still sitting in it?
Portal by Good Resolve 33. When I was younger, my cousins and I would play in my aunt's basement during major holiday parties. The parents would be upstairs, and we would just hang out and mess around in the basement, entertaining ourselves with whatever junk was down there. Well, there was a metal door down there with a bolt lock that we never touched. One day, we were able to unlock the door. And what we saw was this major boxing event going on. Bright lights, an arena, and a major crowd. Everything seemed to freeze when we opened the door, though. The people in the crowd turned around and looked at us. The fighters stopped fighting. The referee signaled us out. Then we saw shadows in the crowd running their way towards us. I know this all sounds crazy, but I remember how scared we were. We shut the door and ran upstairs, then sat in the living room with our parents. I remember them being like, "What has gotten into these kids?" as we just sat there in silence. We were terrified because we thought we were going to be in trouble. Nobody ever came up the stairs from the basement, though. Fast forward to a year later. I tried to tell my parents, and they swear that I just imagined it. I thought I did too for the longest time, until randomly one of my cousins from that day hit me up after a long period of no communication, only to bring up that same event, detail for detail, just as I described and just as I remembered it. I went back up to that house to check out the door. Across from it is the neighbor's basement door, since it was a duplex, and the stairs leading up to the metal basement doors that come out of the backyard. I'm not sure what that was, and I promise you, I'm not crazy. I get goosebumps just thinking about that situation sometimes, because it makes absolutely no sense why we saw what we did.
Unexpected Kitchen Visitor by Bethany. This happened about 7 or 8 years ago, when I was renting a small 2-bedroom house with my boyfriend just outside of Portland. I don't recall what year the house was built, but it looked like it hadn't been redone since the 80s. It had creaky hardwood floors and doors that were sometimes hard to open and close. You get the idea. My boyfriend almost always worked nights, so I was usually by myself. This one night, I think it was in the summer because I remember sleeping with the window cracked, I just couldn't fall asleep. I got up at around midnight, maybe later, made myself some sleepy time tea, and sat in the kitchen scrolling on my phone. The house had this constant hum at night, the fridge buzzing, the water heater popping, cars passing on the nearby road. Stuff you get used to. At some point, I finally gave up and went back to bed. I know I fell asleep because I remember the feeling of waking up suddenly, like someone had nudged me, or maybe I just jolted awake. The room was pitch dark, except for a faint glow from the streetlight outside. I don't remember dreaming or anything, but I had that heavy, panicked feeling you get after a nightmare. That's when I heard it. It wasn't loud, but I heard the scraping of a chair leg in the kitchen, then silence. Then what sounded like a glass being set down. I froze. My first thought was someone broke in, but it didn't sound like a break-in. No rummaging, no footsteps, just these small, casual noises. Like someone was casually going about their business. I laid there with my heart pounding, trying to convince myself it was just the house, or traffic, or anything for that matter. I kept thinking, I should grab my phone, I should call someone. But for some reason, I didn't move. I just stayed there, paralyzed. Eventually, I sat up. From my bed, you could see straight down the short hall into the kitchen. And I swear, I don't know how else to put it. I saw something pass in front of the window. Not solid, but not clear either. It was just a shape. Enough to make me duck back under the blanket like a little kid. I must have stayed like that for 10 minutes, maybe longer, listening. Every creak of the house felt amplified. At one point, I thought I heard the faucet turn on for a second. I'm almost certain of it. When I finally forced myself to walk into the kitchen, nothing was there. It was empty and silent. Except, and this is where I tripped myself up, the glass I'd left in the sink after making tea was on the counter. I swear I don't remember moving it. I guess it's possible I did and just forgot. But I've gone back and forth on that specific detail for years. The next morning, I tried to tell my boyfriend, but halfway through, I stopped because it just sounded crazy. He laughed and said I probably dreamed it. But I know the difference between a dream and waking up to that prickling, electric feeling. After that night, I never saw or heard anything again in that house. But I hated being in the kitchen alone after dark. I'd catch myself glancing over my shoulder while cooking, waiting for something to move in the corner of my vision. I don't really have an explanation for you. Maybe it was stress. Maybe I was half asleep. Or maybe something was actually there. I'll never know. But even now, anytime I hear a chair scrape across a floor in a quiet house, my stomach drops, because it puts me right back in that bed, waiting for something I never saw.
The Things That Fed on My Fear by Mallory. Growing up in California, as a woman now in my 30s, I've lived a life entangled with things most people refuse to believe exist. From a young age, I experienced strange, unexplainable things that defy logic, and over time, I've come to accept that some things are beyond our understanding. There are too many stories to share all at once, but I'll tell a few that still haunt me to this day. When I was 5, we moved into a new house. During my childhood, my older sister often babysat me while my parents worked. It's important to note that my sister is a narcissist and a predator, and she began to sexually abuse me early on. I've typically wondered if the scars from that trauma somehow opened up a door, letting the dark spirits find a way to me. Growing up, my house had a reputation. Among my friends, it was known simply as the haunted house. Sleepovers frequently started with laughter but ended in unease. But nothing compared to what happened when I was 11, something I've never forgotten. That night, my best friend and I were having a sleepover. We dragged a mattress to the bottom of the stairs facing the kitchen and the living room, our cozy little setup. Everyone else in the house was asleep upstairs. It was around 2 a.m., and we were whispering, giggling beneath the dim glow of the moonlight shining through the windows, when we heard it, a soft shuffling sound from the kitchen. We both froze. No footsteps on the stairs, no doors opening. Just that strange, slow rustling, like someone moving plastic bags. We listened harder, and then we heard the shuffling again. I stared into the kitchen, heart pounding. I couldn't see anything, no lights, no movement. I remember even thinking that we don't usually leave plastic bags out because of our pets, so I couldn't wrap my mind around what else could be making that sound. "Maybe it's your dog or cat," my friend then whispered. "Maybe it's your dog or cat." Her voice was barely audible. For a moment, that explanation calmed me. We waited, eyes straining in the dark, hoping to have our theory confirmed by seeing a tail or the flick of an ear emerge from the kitchen. Instead, something else came out. From beneath the dining table, a child-sized dark figure frantically crawled across the room toward our kitchen island that held our sink and had bar stools for additional seating. It moved unnaturally, and it was difficult to tell if it was human or something else. When it darted to the kitchen island, it crouched beneath the bar stools, hidden in a shadow. We didn't speak, mainly because we couldn't. Every hair on my body stood on end. I turned to my friend, desperate for confirmation that she was seeing what I was seeing. Her eyes were wide with terror, her mouth frozen open. But she wasn't looking at the kitchen anymore. She was staring up at the top of the stairs. I followed her gaze. There, at the top of the steps, stood our dog and our cat, both alert. Both staring straight down at us. Panic hit like a wave. We dove under the blanket, trembling, clutching each other like it could shield us. I lifted the edge of the covers just to peek, and I saw it again. The figure shifted, crouching lower beneath the stools, its form barely distinguishable by the surrounding dark. It was just sitting there, watching. Then came the crash. It sounded as if a ceramic bowl flew from the counter and shattered into the sink, the sound exploding through the silence like a gunshot. We screamed, footsteps pounded down the stairs, and it was my mother, startled awake, rushing to the kitchen in confusion. She flicked on the light, but there was nothing there, and the figure was gone. My mother informed us that nothing had fallen into the sink. She searched under the dining table, pulled out the chairs, hoping to find an animal that may have wandered in. But there was nothing to be seen, and there were no signs of plastic bags to make the shuffling sound. As I grew older, things began to escalate. For as long as I can remember, I've had the same recurring nightmare. I scream, but no sound comes out. My voice is gone, swallowed by the void. No one hears me as I'm surrounded by something that is hunting me in my room. As time went on, that nightmare began to bleed into my waking life. Depression settled over me like a heavy fog, suffocating and constant, and with it, the paranormal intensified. During my lowest moments, the atmosphere in the home would shift, subtle at first, then undeniable. Knocking on the walls, taps on my shoulder, a sudden shove when nobody was there. It was as if something was watching me all the time. I would wake up bruised, scratched, marked by something that I couldn't see. And the nightmares, they turned violent. In them, I lost control and would physically lash out and hurt the people that I loved the most. Sometimes I'd even dream I was harming animals, and I would wake up in tears because I love animals more than people, and I can't stand the thought of one being hurt. I'd wake up drenched in fear, heart pounding, and spiraling with thoughts that there was something wrong with me. I began to wonder, was my trauma attracting these things, or was something darker feeding on it? The dreams became more surreal, more terrifying. In my nightmares, books would fly off of shelves, pages tearing through the air like a storm. My bedroom door would slam open and shut with violent force, but nobody stood on the other side. I'd summon what little courage I had to open it, only to feel an invisible force dragging me backward, flinging me onto the bed as the chaos continued to rage around me. Again, I'd scream, but there would be no sound. This wasn't occasional. These episodes came several times a week, relentlessly. I began to fear sleep more than the waking hours, because in those dreams, I wasn't just a victim, I was becoming something else. One night, it was around 2:30 a.m. when I got home from a late outing. Everyone settled into their beds quickly, and the house was wrapped in silence. But something felt wrong. A thick, suffocating dread clung to the air, so heavy that it made breathing feel like a risk. About 20 minutes later, I was still lying awake, staring at my bedroom doorway when I saw it. A figure, just a silhouette, peeking around the doorframe. I thought that it was my dad, I whispered. Dad, what is it? But the figure didn't answer. Instead, it reached for the door handle, and then chaos erupted. The door began to slam open and shut over and over with unnatural force. The sound of papers flying across the room boomed through the silence. I heard deep, jarring thuds, like furniture or fists colliding with walls. The noise was deafening, frantic, and enraging. I screamed over and over, my voice tearing through the house, but nobody came. Paralyzed with fear, I finally forced myself to run. I fled to my sister's room, sobbing, gasping for breath. "Didn't you hear me?" I asked. She sat up in her bed and answered, "I saw the door slamming open and closed, but I didn't hear you scream." I didn't want to be near her, let alone in her bed, but I was desperate. I took a risk out of fear and decided to lie there for the rest of the night, curled up beside her, shaking, trying to make myself as small as possible. Then a voice came, a woman's voice calling from downstairs. It climbed up the staircase like a wave of cold air, Neither my sister nor I could make out the words that she was saying. The footsteps, slow, deliberate, entering the room. I looked at my sister, my whole body trembling. She didn't move. She looked at me and said, "Shut up, close your eyes and ignore it. You're feeding them. That's why they do this to you, you know." I continued to stare at the doorway and tried to calm myself down in case she was right. They were feeding off of my fear. I didn't sleep that night. The next morning, I returned to my room and I saw something that I'll never forget. Just above my doorframe, along the ceiling, there were footprints, long, narrow, and ash gray. Only three toes. It was as if something with an inhuman gait had been hanging from the ceiling upside down, just watching. To whatever was haunting me through this time, let's not meet again.
The Dream Journal by Marlo. I'm writing this down because I need to get it out of my head, even though I know how it's going to sound. My therapist suggested I keep a dream journal a few months back. Nothing mystical, just a way to work through the anxiety that's been hanging around since my divorce. Standard stuff. Write down what you remember when you wake up, look for patterns, that kind of thing. So I bought a little spiral-bound notebook and kept it on my nightstand, next to the lamp and phone charger. The first few weeks were boring. Fragments about work, my ex-husband, random stress. I would jot them down over coffee before heading out to the office. The weird one started in early February, right after a big snowstorm that snowed me in for 3 days. Not long later, I had a dream about my grandmother's old house. The one she lived in when I was a kid, before she moved into assisted living. But in the dream, the rooms were wrong. The kitchen was where the living room should have been, and there was this long hallway that never existed. What made it strange was how real it felt. I could smell the house, that mix of lavender soap and old books that I hadn't thought about in years. I could feel the texture of the wallpaper, this ugly floral pattern from her guest bedroom. When I woke up, I actually checked my fingertips, like I expected them to feel different. Usually, I'd just write, "dreamed about grandma's house." But this time, I went into detail. I even sketched out the layout of the rooms. The next night, I had the same dream. Same wrong layout. But this time, I was searching for something. I kept opening drawers and closets, getting frustrated. I woke up with my heart pounding. I don't remember what I dreamt on the third night, but on the fourth night, I returned to her house. I knew what I was looking for, a small wooden box that used to sit on her dresser. It belonged to her mother. Inside were old photos, some jewelry, and little keepsakes. In that dream, I finally found it, sitting against the wall in that impossible hallway. When I opened it, there were letters inside. I could tell it was my grandmother's handwriting, but every time I tried to read them, the words blurred. I woke up before I could make any sense of it. The next morning, I called my mom. I wasn't going to mention the dreams. She already thinks I'm fragile. But I casually asked if she remembered anything about a wooden box that belonged to Grandma. She got quiet and then said Grandma had mentioned leaving me something in her will, but they never found it. That gave me chills. Still, I told myself maybe I'd overheard my mom talking about it years ago and just forgot. But the dreams kept coming, almost every night for 2 weeks, always the same house, always the same search, finding the box with letters I couldn't read. I started waking up exhausted, like I'd been walking around all night. This is where it gets weird. One morning, I opened the dream journal and found pages I didn't remember writing. 3 full pages in my handwriting, but not in my style. The details were unsettling. Descriptions of light patterns through the windows, the sound of footsteps on the floorboards, even conversations with my grandmother. Conversations I don't remember having. Some words were off too. For example, instead of wooden box, it said wooden heart. And then, just as suddenly, the dream stopped. I haven't had one since. I'm not sure why they stopped, or what they even meant. But I don't really miss them. As for the wooden memory box, it's still missing. Sometimes I think about driving out to Grandma's old house, asking the new owners if I can look around. But part of me is terrified of what I might find, or not find.
The Coastline by Ambitious. I live on the central coast of California, with Highway 1 running through parts of the county. We often drive up 1 just to get away for the day. It's beautiful. On the day that I'm writing about, my husband was driving as usual, and we were headed south, so the coastline was just outside my window. It was a sunny, clear day. I was watching the ocean outside as we cruised down the highway. We got to a section of the highway that runs completely parallel with the coast, where grasslands separate the ocean from the highway. It was at this point, while looking at the sun glistening off the ocean, that I felt a strong wave of déjà vu, which wasn't too strange. I have often seen that stretch of coast, probably 100 times. I glanced away from the window to look over at my husband, who was singing to the music and driving. The déjà vu feeling, however, didn't go away, and when I looked back out the window, the coast, the grasslands, and the sky were no longer a singular view. It was split into panels that were being placed to match the speed of the car. It was like watching a scene, or reality, being made. And I wasn't supposed to see it. I looked away and towards my husband again, and he was just absorbed in the drive, so I didn't say anything. He usually blows me off when I tell him about glitches in the Matrix, things like that. But to this day, I still think about that drive, and I wonder, what did I witness? We've driven that stretch many times since, and nothing like that day has happened. It was beyond unsettling. And it changed how I view what we believe our reality is.
So I was just getting changed before I came down here to record, and I smelled like the most pungent stench of onion, like, you know, like BO onion from my pants. Yeah. And I was wondering, like, I'm not that gross. Like, yeah, I have my moments. We all do. But it was like strong onion smell, strong BO smell. But I went through my pockets and I found an onion, actually. Because I didn't want to litter, even though it's just food. I could have just tossed it, but I had a salad for lunch. And I don't remember why that onion didn't make the cut in the salad, but I put it in my pocket and it stayed there all day. And that's my story, thinking I smelled like onions, but it was a literal onion.
Just a little onion. That's kind of, I don't want to say weird. That's mean. I don't want to be mean. I want to be nice.
I don't know how it got there. I really don't. I tried to make sense of it too. I'm really trying to make sense of it myself. I think what it was, maybe it felt, that's what it was. I think it probably fell off the salad onto the counter. And then I realized, okay, well, there's no trash here. So I'm just going to throw it away after I pay for it. But there was nowhere convenient for me to throw this piece of onion away. So I just kind of put it in my pocket to deal with later, and now I'm paying the price.
So was it like a diced onion, a sliced onion?
Oh, sliced, yes.
Okay, so like
sliced.
An onion curl, like a little
circle.
Piece of it. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. It was a full circle.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, a full slice of an onion. That's really, I don't have anything to say about that. That's just so weird.
Yeah, I just thought you should know. I was kind of dealing with that upstairs. That's why I had to send you a text rather than just, he can wait for me. I knew it was going to turn into a situation because I was losing my mind a little bit slowly.
I guess we should get into the actual content here.
All right, sounds good. I really wanted to talk about A Seat Already Taken by Ali, mostly because of the storage unit auctions. That's something I've wanted to do for a while. And I had like an impromptu storage unit purchase.
Okay.
I told you about it a little bit when I was in GameStop. I was just waiting for my haircut. I was like, I don't know, seventh in line, doesn't matter. So I just go next door to the GameStop to see what kind of corporate BS is going on in the GameStop world these days. And there is this guy in there with a huge tub of old retro games, everything from original NES through Sega Genesis, even Sega CD. And he was trying to sell it to pay some bills. And I shamelessly walked up and said, hey, sorry, not sorry, but I'm going to poach this real quick. Looked him in the eye and said, I'll give you double whatever GameStop's going to offer you.
Yeah.
Double their store credit, not even their cash, but double their store credit.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. They offered the guy like $80 for a big handful. And that's the store credit. Store credit, $80. And you saw the huge pile of games.
Just the Sega CD itself. Come on, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And everybody was a winner. But the cool thing is, and I really like this, the GameStop employee, he was a real one. He was clearly there just trying to make a check like anybody else. He just happened to be at GameStop.
Yeah.
And he like fist bumped me and he said, oh, dude, no, I'd rather it go to somebody who I know will appreciate it rather than collecting dust on our shelves and just making the company richer. And I'm like, oh, dude, I love you. Thanks so much. And I kind of want to go back and give him one of the cartridges that he kind of like drooled over. I think I will. Yeah.
Though he probably wouldn't care. How young did he look?
He was our age. So like he knew it was up. Yeah, he knew it was up. Like we were like nerding out over some of like the history or whatever, like the rare gems and everything. Like you could tell he's been around and he loves the game. No pun intended.
Yeah, you ran into, like I said, that was a needle in the hay. That was a diamond in the rough. You don't find that stuff anymore. You don't go to garage sales and see people selling their retro game collections because everybody wants to make as much as they can on eBay for all of their stuff, which I understand. I get that. But I just miss the days when you could go to like a garage sale or a flea market and just be like, oh my God, this guy's selling his NES collection for $30. I'm going to get it. You can't do that anymore.
OMG, that's Archie Bunker's armchair. I gotta have it.
Yeah.
I saw that in one of the museums I went to. I forget where, but that was kind of cool to see.
Yeah.
I'd want that sort of armchair.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of cool to see Archie Bunker hunched over a burning fire out in the middle of Texas. But in this case, I guess we get the former owner of maybe the house. No, not the house. What am I talking about? The chair itself. Yeah, the chair.
Yes, yeah.
Pulled out that Polaroid or... They didn't even say that it was a Polaroid. We're going to say it was a Polaroid, though. That's a lot more aesthetically spooky.
Sure. It's more, cinematic.
For sure. For sure. It makes me wonder, though, like if chairs and objects can be haunted so easily, you would think we would have a lot more instances of haunted houses because hardly anybody's a first-time owner anymore. But we don't really, like, yeah, we get haunted house stories, but they're not as common as you might think or you would maybe expect. All things considered.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the recliner reminded me of The Conjuring Part 2. I don't know if you saw any of the sequels. I know we've talked about how the first one was really good.
Not the sequels, no.
It's just like a classic ghost story. But yeah, the second one is actually pretty decent. I really liked it. I might even have liked it more than the first. I kind of want to go to Club Haunted House more than I want to go to Club Aqua, but that's neither here nor there. It reminded me of The Conjuring Part 2. And it's great to have a haunted story. The story that I have this week as well, nice, big, long haunted house story. More of a, I guess the person was being haunted, but both she and her sister experienced it. So it wasn't just her, but we'll get to that one when we get to it. I love having haunted house stories because, you know, you look at the cover for our podcast and it's a big haunted house floating in the middle of this this Beetlejuice realm. And the half of the episode is usually just like Glitch in the Matrix or cryptids or aliens or out-of-body experiences and stuff like that. And it's becoming like, I get excited when we get a haunted house story.
That's a classic for a reason. I think that's why we probably went with the cover art, not even because it's to be expected, you know, haunted house, but there's something about it. It's a classic for a reason. Disneyland knew what they were doing. It's a haunted house attraction, not a poltergeist attraction, which I suppose could be one and the same to some degree. But yeah, I think it's cool.
Mm-hmm. I agree. But yeah, speaking of the story by Mallory about the haunting, I want to talk about that one for a second because right off the bat, the author talks about how they were abused as a child by their older sister. Really disturbing stuff. And they wonder if that trauma opened a door to darker forces. And I had an interview with Kadra Brannon. She's a podcaster on my now defunct podcast, Cryptic Encounters, about how trauma or even injuries can somehow change somebody's reality. And in some cases, it can give them abilities to see spirits or sometimes see the future or even other dimensions. Then there are the stories where people can like speak different languages or play different instruments. You know, trauma and injury, for some reason, they cause some people in some cases to have these abilities or, in this case, these curses, these hauntings. They get haunted by these spirits. It's a really disturbing fact, but it's something that's been popping up in history for years and years. I highly recommend checking out that episode. It was the final episode of the series.
I do wonder how much of that is potentially like a weird way to disconnect and I guess disassociate the mind's way of coping underneath heavy stress. But then the instruments and the languages, that's what's really interesting to me because anybody could maybe travel or think that they travel somewhere, but a skill is something else, you know, like having a vision, the mind can go places, but there's no way I could pick up a guitar right now and start sweeping through everything and playing some Dragon Force just because I experienced a traumatic event. No way.
Sure.
So when things like that happen, that's really remarkable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's completely different things. Those are more related to injuries, I guess, brain injuries, head injuries. Somehow it knocked something loose that was stuck, some stuck energy, and it allowed them to channel this incredible ability.
I just imagine like Stone Cold Steve Austin getting hit in the head with a steel chair and he starts like yelling in Mandarin.
Oh my God, that would be so freaking good.
Yeah, like not kayfabe, like a real thing. Like, Stone Cold, I don't know any Mandarin. I'm not going to try. That would be a bad idea. But use your imagination there.
Oh, man. Yeah. That's so funny. Yeah. Armando, our mutual, sent me the video of Raja Jackson. Do you remember that? What happened? Or did you read about that?
Actually, yeah. Today I saw that video. That was so disturbing, like straight up attempted murder.
So his dad was, what was his dad's name? He was Rampage.
Rampage.
So his son, he's a live streamer. I think they both live stream and they're very controversial characters. Mm-hmm. They like to get into a lot of trouble. But yeah, the son Raja got into this spat with a wrestler at an independent wrestling match, and that wrestler was drunk and thought that he was one of the wrestlers, but he was just there, and he smashed a beer can over his head, and he thought that he was acting because they had a camera out. He thought they were doing a bit, and he's like, I'm so sorry. He apologized like 4 or 5 times. I'm so sorry for doing it. And he forgave him. He was like, yeah, no problem. That's fine. We'll take care of it in the ring. They like joked around that he was going to come in and pretend to like fight in the ring later. Anyways, he sits down and the wrestling match starts going, and during the wrestling match, Raja on his, I think it's Raja, right? That's his name. He's live streaming and all of his chat is like amping him up. Like, I can't believe you let him do that. Don't be a bitch. Like all this talk. And they start like revving him up and he starts changing his mind. Like, yeah, you know what? You're right. Yeah. You know what? You're right. So he goes in the ring and beats the hell out of this guy. Like real life beats it. The guy's out. Like flatline, like completely incoherent. And I don't know why I brought this up. Something triggered this. We were talking about something. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Somebody brain injury.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Brain injury.
Yeah.
I had never seen somebody fight like that in the ring and get beat up like that in a wrestling match. And it was just so shocking. And I, man, check out the video if you have a strong stomach. If you can handle that kind of stuff, it's wild to see what's going on. I mean, I would say that was attempted murder.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah. Not even like exaggerating. Like when you're hitting somebody that hard repeatedly, when they're already out, there's no other way to spin it.
And it's funny because afterwards, I shouldn't say funny, but he's like, they're filming him and he's on the phone with, I think his dad or somebody else. And they tell him like, no, he's out in the ring. He's flatlined. He's unconscious, dude. And he just goes, my bad, my bad.
You can't really expect much more from somebody who would do that to begin with. But yeah.
I know. So before we take off, I do want to cover some of the comments because we don't have too much longer. I know you got to jump on a plane soon, and I kind of want to keep this one short, even though I've babbled on about two completely unrelated stories. We have a few comments here. I want to talk about this one from Davila. This was also a Spotify comment like the previous ones. They say, these new quote-unquote UFO researchers, Corbell and Knapp, the ones that we talked about in that interview, have no research or skin in the UFO area, but are being broadcast on popular shows and stations often, which is so sketchy to me. You could search and see how long other researchers have been on the topic, yet they have no history that dates back far enough to be considered serious. Honestly, it feels like they are...
controlled opposition?
Yeah, controlled opposition is what I would say. But what they finish off here by saying, it feels like they're just there to keep control of the narrative.
Right.
Yeah. And they just can't take them seriously because they give off a showman energy. And I completely agree, because if you watch Corbell's documentary that he did on, what's the guy? The
Area 51 guy?
Shoot.
Bob Lazar.
Yeah, Bob Lazar. There's so much of just like exposition of him, of Jeremy Corbell, just like changing clothes in his house and combing his hair and trimming his beard or something. I don't know.
Rubbing beef tallow over his face.
Yeah, there's just so much of him talking, like rubbing his whiskey barrel deodorant on his armpits. I don't know.
Oh, man.
And it's just like, oh, God. Get to it. I can recall vividly being angry watching that, but I completely agree. I think they are absolutely just showmen, and they may very well be controlled opposition. It seems to be that way.
Most people are, I would have to say, because I think if anybody were to really get too close to the truth, the people in charge have a way to take them out, and that's all I'm going to say. Like, yeah. Otherwise,
they always do.
You would have, yeah, they always, exactly, they always do. JFK, but
Ghislaine Maxwell,
yeah, Martin Luther King.
Oh, wait, no, Ghislaine's still alive. Ghislaine's still alive.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, but yeah, no, when you get too close, when you fly too close to the sun, your wings will melt, and they make sure that they do melt. And this isn't any particular like. Mm-hmm. Group that you can just name by any sort of like proper noun or anything like that. It's just, yeah, whoever is out there in charge of the narrative, and it's multiple people underneath different umbrellas. So yeah, not trying to instill any weird conspiracy theories, and I'll put words in my mouth. I know what some people might think.
We are not conspiracy theorists, in all honesty. We're actually not. We're just curious people.
Yeah, we just know there's a lot behind the curtain.
We would never do anything stupid to ourselves or harm ourselves. We just want to put that out there for the future. Yeah, future-proof our
God bless America.
So there's a couple more comments I want to throw out there before we finish up. Jules B-Side from Discord said, I just keep thinking about how I have so many stories to send in, but I'm always so lazy. I think I will send in the one about the time I got possessed. And how it wasn't exactly like movies usually portray it, but it did nearly end my life. I would say, Jules, why are you even waiting to share that story? That's wild. And anybody else that is thinking of sharing a story, and maybe they're just a little too nervous to, it'll probably end up on the episode if it's decent. Like, send it in by all means. We want to hear from all of you guys. We love hearing from listeners. And to kind of bookend that, Via Carpenter, also in the Discord, said, I'm here, but I've been listening to Odd Trails for years. Tell me why my friend just told me last night that she had sleep paralysis for years and still has it. And last time
There was a beautiful blue being with huge curly hair standing illuminated by the moon in front of her window. She said she wanted to talk to them, but she was obviously having sleep paralysis and couldn't move. Then they just walked out through the wall. She said she saw them twice. I'm like, bruh. I'm going to try and get her to write some of her stories. Again, do it. Have them write the story. Send it in.
Yeah, there you go.
You can send your stories into stories@oddtrails.com if you want to hear them on the show. And make sure you sign up for our Patreon, patreon.com/oddtrails. You'll get ad-free versions of all of our episodes. You'll truly be a huge supporter of the show. It keeps us going. And be sure to check out the new episodes of my other podcasts like Let's Not Meet and the Old Time Radio Cast. And I think by the time this one comes out, my new podcast, Degrads, with the cast of Degrassi. Kind of a weird crossover, but if you like Degrassi, you might want to check it out. We'll see you guys next week. Everybody, stay safe.
Peace out.
Don't let the ghosts and the ghouls disturb you, darling.